Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Monday, December 19th. I'm Alan Shartok. Support for the Medical Monday comes from the University at Albany Biomedical Services, Sciences Department, offering graduate fellowships to train in the New York State Public Health Laboratory, now accepting PhD and master's applications. BMS at albany.edu for information. Joining us this afternoon for Medical Monday is Dr. Camillo Torres of Vassar Brothers Medical Center in Poughkeepsie. He's here to answer your questions about radiation oncology. We always get a lot of calls, and we will today on this program, so get yours in now, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Torres, your calls and all much more coming up on the Vox Pop right after this news. Hello once again and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Shartok. Joining us on this Medical Monday to discuss radiation oncology is Dr. Camillo Torres of the Dyson Center for Cancer Care at Vassar Brothers Medical Center in Poughkeepsie, New York. Dr. Torres received his medical degree from the State University of New York's Health Science Center in Brooklyn, which was also where he did his residency in the Department of Radiation Oncology. Dr. Torres, welcome to Medical Monday.
Thank you for having me.
And I see you brought your wonderful wife, Jeannie, with you. She's supposed to kick you if you do anything wrong. Okay, so here we go.
She keeps me in line, yeah.
The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also post comments on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, and you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, this is a terrific opportunity to get to know what a radiological oncologist does.
Radiation oncologists do.
What do you do?
So we treat cancer patients with high-energy photons. We treat all kinds of different cancers, and we've been doing really well in terms of helping people and cure rates and all those good things. We utilize radiation in combination with chemotherapy to treat esophageal cancer, rectal cancer, colon cancer. We treat breast cancer after lumpectomy with radiation, all kinds of cancers. And one of the improvements in our treatment is that we are able to spare normal tissue and concentrate our radiation to the areas of interest, to the tumors or the tumor beds. So we treat all kinds of patients in all different diseases.
So let me ask you a specific question. We've had people on who describe esophageal cancer. You just mentioned that. Now, there are three stages, right? There's regular, then there's, whether you say there are four, and then there's dysplasia, right? Then there's cancer. What do you do if you see cancer in the esophagus? What do you do? How do you do that?
So it depends on the stage of the disease.
Sure.
And the disease is staged according to how deep the tumor penetrates the wall of the esophagus.
Uh-huh.
And so if the tumor is superficial, you can do superficial treatments like laser ablation or just superficial surgery to remove the tumor. But when the tumor is deep and it goes through the wall of the esophagus, then surgery is the mainstay of treatment. But sometimes the tumors are too large or they have already spread to the lymph nodes that are around the tumor. And we utilize radiation and chemotherapy to downstage the disease and then make the surgery much easier.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of times cancers are being treated not just by one modality, like surgery, but by multimodality specialties.
That's very interesting, because in the old days, I remember when they were talking, you know, that you could have seeds put in, or you could your prostate, or you could have radiation, and there was always a debate, or so you could do surgery. And the real question is, which one was better? Now, is there any cooperation between the various modalities?
Yeah, so the approach to the cancer patient now is multi-specialty. We have tumor boards and conferences where, for example, I'll take breast cancer as an example. We present patients after they're diagnosed and plan the treatment that would best suit that case.
With the tumor board, so essentially you would be sitting there, the surgeon would be sitting there, you know, that's how it works.
The pathologist, the radiologist, everybody, the medical oncologist. So we present the case, we see what the options are for the patient, and we kind of choose what's the best. But we're not really choosing, we're finding guidelines. We're following guidelines. There are guidelines that are set for the entire country. An example is the NCCN guidelines, which is the National Cooperative Cancer Group. And what those guidelines say is if you have a certain stage of disease, these are the options that you have, and these are the options you can take and discuss with the patient. The ultimate decision is really made by the patient. Some patients will say, I don't want to do chemo radiation before, let's just go for the surgery and then we'll see what happens.
Well, there are those people who will tell you, maybe this is all outdated, I'm giving bad information on the air, but there will be those people in the old days, and of course this isn't the old days anymore, who would tell you that if you opted for the radiological, what would end up happening is that after you couldn't do surgery after that was done, whereas if you did surgery, you could do the radiation after that. Is that right?
Well, it is true to a point. We utilize radiation prior to surgery in many diseases. And we do that to, again, shrink the tumor and make the surgery easier. But when we use radiation as a definitive treatment, as a curative treatment, the doses of radiation are much higher.
Sure.
And sometimes, yes, we cannot do surgery after that. Yeah. So it all depends on the stage.
Wouldn't you have to be stupid not to take the surgery, to do the surgery first if you have the option of doing the other one later?
Well,
Jeannie,
no.
By the way, is shaking her head vehemently no.
So I give you an example. For rectal cancer,
years
ago, we used to treat with surgery.
Yes.
Patients will come in and get the rectum excised, and then we will give radiation and chemotherapy based on the pathological stage. But nowadays, what we do, the standard, is to give chemotherapy and radiation to downstage and make the surgery easier. And there's ample proof that going that way increases overall survival.
And that has to do with the amount of radiation, right?
Correct. And so we give 5 weeks of radiation and chemotherapy. That's what we call a preoperative course of treatment.
Now, one other thing, and you could do it real fast, then we'll take some calls. And that is that you have advanced your techniques to the point where you have given options. So you were telling me, for example, that in one case, used to have them over a long period of time, and now you could do it basically 5 times really fast.
That's correct. So for very early stage lung cancer, we are utilizing a technique called stereotactic body radiosurgery. And this technique allows us to concentrate the radiation to the tumor with maybe 2 or 3 millimeters margin. So very conformal.
Absolutely.
And what
a millimeter is what? Is part of your fingernail? Half of your fingernail?
I think it's like the width of a grain of rice, uncooked.
Wow. Okay.
It's that small.
Wow.
And so if you can deliver the radiation in such conformal way, you can deliver high doses of radiation over a short period of time. So a 5-week course of radiation that we used to give in the past, now we give it in 5 days.
Has it changed the outcome on lung cancer?
I'm glad you asked that. Yeah, there is ample. There is actually ASTRO last year. That ASTRO is our conference for radiation oncologists, presented data from the VA that show that since the inception of stereotactic body radiosurgery, the survival for a stage 1 lung cancer, either adeno or squamous cell, has doubled. survival has doubled.
Well, it wasn't very high to begin with, right? It was like 5% or something.
No,
like
for
that.
Stage one, it was about 35%, 40%. Now it's close to 75%, 80%.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very good.
Well, that's unbelievable. Well, we have a lot more to talk about. I should tell you that our first caller is always a guy by the name of Jim from Matamoros. And he always has a question. I don't know where he gets them from, but he always has a question. So we'll go to him first. Jim from Matamoros, you're on.
What range in rats is generally used to treat dense mass tumors such as fibrosarcoma or osteogenic sarcoma?
So it depends what you're trying to accomplish. For example, for osteosarcomas that are going to render the patient with an amputation, for example, we will give 5 weeks or about a range of 50 gray in combination with chemotherapy in trying to shrink the tumor and avoid the patient having an amputation. Now, if the sarcoma is in an area that we're not allowed surgery, then we will give 7 weeks or about 70 gray to try to cure the patients, although curative intent in sarcomas is very difficult to accomplish.
Jim, thank you for your call. Appreciate it very much. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We've got a Bill in Gloversville. All right. Bill in Gloversville, you're on.
Doctor, don't you find it sardonic that radiation causes cancer in healthy cells, and yet it's used to kill cancer cells?
That's a great question, yes. And I think that notion comes from our time of the atomic bomb and the radiation that was given on large populations, and that's whole body radiation. The analogy I like to use for my patients is that radiation is like fire. If you use fire to cook or to heat up your water, if you, really utilize something that is very dangerous in a very safe way, it can be very beneficial. So radiation, if we give it to just the area of tumor cells, then we will be able to kill all those bad cells. The other point I want to make is that normal cells have the ability to correct and repair radiation damage. Radiation is everywhere. And so our cells know how to correct those damages that are created in our DNA. Cancer cells are so interested in reproducing that they bypass that corrective path. And so they create more DNA damage. And that's how we select the cancer cells to die when we use the radiation.
But we've gotten a lot better, right, at figuring out how to target those small areas.
That's correct. We utilize, for example, we are now utilizing PET scans, which are tests that will tell us the metabolic activity of a tumor.
Wow.
To map the areas that are very active and spare those areas that years ago we thought may have been affected by the tumor, but in fact they weren't.
Well, that's amazing.
So giving less radiation to a less volume of tissue is what's making the treatment more tolerable.
Bill, thank you, and thank you, Zach. Zach is going to take us to a very short break, a couple of seconds. We'll be right back, and then we want you on the air, 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in right now are 100%.
Support comes from the Cheryl R. Lindenbaum Comprehensive Cancer Center at New York Presbyterian Hudson Valley Hospital. NewYorkPresbyterian.org/Hudson Valley to learn more. New York Oncology Hematology now offering immunotherapy treatment for multiple cancers. 7 locations across the region. World-class care close to home. NewYorkOncology.com. Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency reminding listeners to choose holiday cards made from recycled paper and recycle cards at season's end. UCRRA.org. Ichiban Japanese and Chinese Restaurant, Central Avenue, Albany. Japanese, Chinese, and sushi bar. Dinner entrees served with soup, salad, and shrimp appetizer. Delivery expanding to Gilderland. 518-432-0358. And Spate Consulting and Coaching, Shelburne Falls. More than 20 years of working with leaders and teams committed to purposeful change. See it whole and move forward. DLSPECHT.com.
So we are definitely back with you guys. We have all kinds of things to do here. We can bring you your voice if you dial 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. And I need my wonderful friends from our newsroom to come in here and do something and to perform a radiological operation on my screen here. Something ain't quite right. Okay, so what we need now are people who want to call us. 1-800-348-2551. But in the meantime, I'm so struck, Doc, by the incredible repair of the stuff that you're doing, where lung, which used to be a death sentence, is really increasing to the point where you get stage one. Of course, that's not stage. Of course, that's not stage three. Going to 75% cure rate. Well, amazing. Thank you, Ray.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, that's for stage one disease, and what's happening is that insurances now are paying for routine screening CT scans for patients that have a history of smoking for more than 30 years, or are over the age of 55 and smoked for more than 30 years. So we are looking for these cancers early on, finding them in a very early stage. And if the patient has comorbidities or they have some diseases that won't allow them to get surgery, we can treat them with the stereotactic body radiosurgery.
Well, I did want to do a real call out to our wonderful friend Ray Graff, who came in here and just corrected what just went down on my machine, and it's back up doing it now. And we don't like that one bit. And I know that Ray will hurry right back into the studio to correct it once more, this time showing me how to do it. And that way I will be, teach a fisherman how to fish as opposed to, catch a fish.
Right.
Okay, so we're going to go to Jessica. Jessica in Ludlow, Massachusetts. Okay, Jessica, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I had a question in regards to a lung cancer that has metastasized into the bone. I understand that it's stage four.
Mm-hmm.
She also has a tumor that is wrapping around her spinal cord. And I was wondering if, because of the fact that this tumor is wrapped around her spinal cord, they said that she can't walk. And what I was initially wondering is if a candidate has to be able to walk in order to receive chemo treatment.
Well, I'm not a medical oncologist, but I know that my medical oncologist colleagues would like patients to be in a reasonable functional state. For example, they need to have some function and be able to breathe and have, just a minimum of stamina. So if your mom is in bed and she is predisposed to have pneumonias and has low blood counts and has other comorbidities, maybe chemotherapy is not the best way to go. Because remember, chemotherapy is a treatment that has a lot of side effects and can make patients sick. So maybe that's what they mean by the patient being ambulatory.
Right. Because, there were some doctors that were giving her hope, and then there were some doctors that were just blatantly outright saying that there is nothing we can do for you, and this is it. And now we don't know how long she has now because of this. So It would be good to have, some positive information, but, I want to be realistic at the same time. And I didn't know if what the doctors are saying were like, oh, we can do this or we can't do this, because I kept getting mixed information. That's why I decided to call you guys.
Oh, thanks for that. Unfortunately, you know, some doctors like to be more aggressive than others. And but remember that the ultimate decision, it's always coming from the family or the patient themselves. So if somebody's offering too much treatment, and you know your mom and you know that she's not up to receiving it, then you should say no. But if mom is willing to, if she's willing to do it, and she's going to work hard at getting out of bed and getting herself the hydration that she needs and the nutrients that she needs to get through the chemotherapy, then that's something that you should consider.
Of course.
Okay, well, thank you so much for the information.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye. Of course, Doc, the interesting thing about this is, if you say it's up to the patient, but of course we patients don't know enough to be making intelligent decisions all the time. So then we have to sort of rely on a multiple of sources who may tell us different things.
And that's the difficult part of the art of medicine.
Yeah.
It's not, even guidelines that we use all the time to tell patients how to, they should be treated don't fit every single scenario. And patients and families may have different ideas. I have patients that come in with pretty straightforward diseases that opt to do natural remedies.
Mm-hmm.
And
what do you tell them?
I tell them it's, you know, it's sure, it's up to you. I mean, I know that the placebo effect works 30% of the time.
Wow.
And so if a patient is doing something with natural medicines and is working for them, I'll tell them keep doing it. Mm-hmm. It's really the choice of the patient.
Yeah, but of course you say you do carry the, follow the guidelines, and the guidelines don't say eat a lettuce leaf to cure your cancer.
That's correct. And, you know, some patients say, well, observation is a way to go, and I would say it's a way to go. I don't recommend it.
Right. Okay. Thank you for that. Let's see. So let's go to line number two and Richard. Richard, you're on.
Sorry. Hi.
Hey.
Hello, Alan. Hello, doctor. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I just wanted to ask if recent developments in genetics have influenced your treatments as far as complementing traditional treatment modalities.
That's a great question. So we know that for certain cancers, I'm going to give the example of lung cancer, there are these genetic markers that would make the patient more receptive to target therapies. There is a marker for an epidermal growth factor that, when it's present on the pathology of the disease, will make that patient eligible for target therapy. For example, breast cancer, there are markers that if the cells have estrogen and progesterone receptors, we utilize this aromatase inhibitor medications that are target therapies for that specific factor. So we are individualizing the treatment by looking at the cancer, by looking at different factors or markers that these cancers have, and then treating them in a very individualized way.
So your answer, Richard, is yes.
Yeah, that's a very convoluted way to say
your,
yes.
Your answer is yes. They're finding all kinds. I was talking to the doc before, and they now know all kinds of things about various tumors that come from genetic studies and have helped a great deal. Did you want to follow up on that, Richard?
No, that's it. Thank you very much. You guys have a happy holiday.
You too. Thanks.
Yeah. All right. 1-800-348-2551. Okay, so we're going to go to Chad in North Canaan. All right, Chad, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, doctors. It would seem that chemotherapy just seems to be the end-all, be-all cure for, and I shouldn't say cure, but it just seems to be it. I mean, is there really nothing else? There's no herbs, there's no roots, there's no diet, there's no nothing else. It's just chemotherapy?
No. So just to remind us, some of the chemotherapy agents that we use are organic and natural. For example, Taxol is a medication we use that comes from the bark of a tree.
As does aspirin.
Yes, correct. And so, but now we have other modalities. We have immunotherapy, which is having our immune system recruit our white blood cells and go after tumors. And an example of that is on prostate cancer, we have a new treatment called Prevenge. And this treatment, what it does is it takes white blood cells from the patient, they grow them in the lab with a anti-PSA marker, and then they put them back into the patient's bloodstream, and those cells go and seek cells that are producing PSA. We also have target therapy, as I alluded before, where we find what the problem is with certain markers of the tumor, and we have medications that go after that. I'll give you another example. In breast cancer, there is a mutation that's called a HER2-new, and the HER2-new positive marker, we have now a medication called Herceptin. And Herceptin, it's a medication we give IV, and it goes, and it does really well for patients that have that specific mutation. So we are, again, we are following those crumbs of hope that we can individualize based on factors that are given by the tumors themselves and treat those patients with specific immunotherapy and target therapy in addition to chemotherapy.
So I knew a woman, Chad, who had ovarian cancer, and she died, but she was out there for 10 years, and she did not take the traditional stuff. She was riding in a car one day. They picked up a hitchhiker, and the hitchhiker said, "You don't have to worry. You can take, I don't know whether it was lettuce leaves or whatever else." And she did exactly what, I guess it was mistletoe therapy. And she did it. And she lasted for 10 years, which was pretty good with ovarian cancer. So the answer is, who knows, right?
That's right.
Richard, did you want to chat with me?
Is it true that that your body's pH, if it's more alkaline, then cancer cells have a tougher time? Any truth to that?
I read and I heard the theory quite a lot, but I'm not sure. I really don't know that has anything to do with promoting or preventing cancer.
So, Chad, thank you very much for your call. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
All right. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in now are very, very good. Let's go to Barbara in Pauling, I guess, Pauling.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can, Barbara. Can you hear us?
Yes.
Good, go ahead.
I had radiation for breast cancer. It started at the beginning of April, and it ended at the beginning of June. And right now what I'm experiencing still is what my medical oncologist has referred to as radiation itch. And it's not a constant thing. It comes and goes. But does it seem like that should be gone by now?
Well, it should have been gone by now. Most patients, I will say 90% of patients, usually 6 to 8 weeks after the treatment is completed will have no side effects from the radiation, but not everybody reacts the same. And we have some patients that either the skin or the lymphatic system or the chest wall becomes inflamed, and that may take a longer period of time. This time of year, when the weather is cold, some patients complain of dryness of the skin. The temperature itself, affects some patients. Some patients during the summertime after radiation can have some sort of recall where the skin gets red and angry again. So the variability of reactions is just amazing. And how patients react is, we can really predict. But no, some patients can have residual side effects that can last months.
Yeah. No shaving still either. There's no hair that grows out of my armpit anymore.
So is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Either way is fine. I just want to make sure it's okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Barbara, thank you for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. And we are going to hang up on that one. And now we're going to go to Jim in Adams, Massachusetts. Okay, Jim in Adams, you are about to be on there through the magic. Whoops, whoa, I messed up that way. Jim,
hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, Dr. Shartok, how you doing this afternoon?
Good. Go ahead.
All right, Doctor. Yes, a couple callers previous, the gentleman was asking about alkalizing the body systems. I think it was either Dr. Warburg or Warburger won the 1938 Nobel Prize for Medicine by proving that fact. All known types of cancer at that time could not survive in an alkaline environment. A great way to alkalize the body. Excuse me. Great way to alkalize the body's blood chemistry and everything else is to take powdered kelp every day. Food is your medicine.
The doctor,
as Hippocrates said.
The doctor is nodding his head, saying, "Okay, it works for some people, but 1938 was a long time ago." Thanks again. Appreciate your call. Yeah. All right, and let's go to Roger in Gloversville. All right, Roger, you're on Gloversville, where nobody goes barehanded. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. I have a history of cancer in my family. I have not been diagnosed with cancer. However, I have a pulmonary sarcoidosis. And I was wondering if you had any thoughts about where that fits in with anything.
Well, we know that family history of any cancer predisposes the family to have that cancer. So if you have first-line relatives with cancer and you have concern, we now have the capability of doing genetic testing. And that can help you in the future determine what your risks are.
Yeah, I do have the BRCA2 gene.
Okay, so you're probably predisposed to breast cancer. Do you have family members with breast cancer?
That's what my mother died of, and my sister died of ovarian cancer.
Yeah, so we don't do, I mean, you could... if you have a lot of breast tissue, maybe have mammography or just do self-examination every month. But also as important is to do colonoscopy and PSA routinely to make sure that all those cancers are you know, screened properly. But do you have a pulmonologist?
I have almost a routine colonoscopy every year now, and my PSA is always checked.
Okay.
And I've been to a urologist for my prostate. But I'm wondering, does the sarcoidosis fit anywhere in there that you can think of?
So sarcoidosis is inflammation, and things that create inflammation for a long period of time are known to create cancer. So I would be, remiss not to mention that. But, we know that some of the infections that are very chronic, like HPV infection, can create cancers in the cervix and in the oral cavity. So there may be a predisposition, but how big, I couldn't tell you.
So we're going to have to take a break. Thank you for your call. Appreciate it. We'll be right back. We'll take your calls if you're Jeannie or Donna or Larry or anyone else who's on the line right now.
Support comes from Noble Home, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Custom-designed panelized house kits featuring eco-friendly, passive, and solar design elements. Noble-home.net. Albany Cardiothoracic Surgeons, providing patient-centered heart surgery for over 40 years in the Capital Region, practicing cardiac surgery at St. Peter's Hospital. ACTSURG.com. Nine-Pin Cider Works, hard cider made from locally sourced apples. Tasting Room, Wednesday through Sunday, 929 Broadway, Albany. Drink New York Apples, 9pincider.com. Rhinebeck Artist Shop, Rhinebeck, New Paltz, Kingston. 40 years of providing professional picture framing, fine art materials, and holiday art sets, stocking stuffers, and materials for young artists. Rhinebeckart.com. And the Brattleboro Retreat, providing hospital-based mental health services, including medically assisted alcohol withdrawal. BrattleboroRetreat.org for information.
And we are back, and we are delighted to have, despite a few small problems, I want to thank our friend Dr. Camilo Torres of Vassar Brothers Medical Center for being with us today. Let's go for some more calls. And the way we do that is we look up and see who has been holding on the longest. And in this case, in this case, it's Jeannie from Margaretville. Okay, Jeannie, you're on.
Hi, Alan.
Hi,
Doctor. Thank you for being there. I've just completed my sixth round of chemo for six recurrences of ovarian cancer that I've had over the last 9.5 years, and I'm doing well. But now my doctor is talking about doing some radiation. My last two reoccurrences appeared in the PET scan to be about in the same area in my abdomen. I'm just wondering, is he trying to throw everything at me but the kitchen sink at this point? Because I had heard that radiation didn't really work for ovarian cancers that had metastasized.
And that's true, because radiation is for a localized area of disease. Chemotherapy goes everywhere. So if your cancer is metastasized and it's in the bones and other organs, we don't want to utilize radiation to just one certain area when we can give you systemic treatment. But if you have received systemic treatment that has worked well in other areas and you have just one spot that's still active, maybe radiation can take care of that. So maybe that's the thinking he's having.
The thought behind it.
And could you clarify something for those of us who don't know much? And that is the PET scan. Now, what exactly is a PET scan compared to other scans?
So a PET scan is sugar is the main source of energy for cells that are growing fast or using a lot of energy.
Oh, interesting.
So
do diabetics get more cancer than others?
Well, there is a slight increase, I think the data has shown, but not really.
Okay.
Actually, in diabetics, it's very difficult to do a PET scan because their sugars are very high. So some diabetics that don't control their sugars, we can't perform PET scans. But in the normal person, if you go in for a PET scan, you're going to be injected with a radioactive sugar molecule that is going to be taken by those cells that are very active metabolically. And so when we do this scan, we wait a certain amount of time and then we do this scan, we can see the concentration of the sugar in those areas of high metabolic rate, and those are the areas that correspond to the tumors.
And then you target those areas.
And we target those, correct.
Jeannie?
Can I ask another question,
Sure.
Doctor?
Sure.
Go ahead.
You were talking about a speeded up version of the radiation where you get it in a few days rather than over several weeks. Is that something that might be applicable to what I'm talking about?
It could be. Again, it depends where the anatomical area of the residual disease is. If it is away from the bowel and the kidneys and all main organs, we may be able to do that. If it happens to be close to the spine or the liver or the kidney, areas that are not really you don't want to give too much radiation, then we slow down the treatment and give it in a fractionated manner so that it's better tolerated. So it all depends where you have it.
Okay.
Thanks.
Is it all right to ask just one quick more question?
Sure, go ahead.
Side effects. I have no idea what kind of side effects to expect. A little bit nervous after being through so much chemo. Don't want to go down that road just quite yet, but what are some of the side effects for this kind of radiation?
So the side effects, again, are going to be determined where the location of the tumor is. If the tumor is located near the bowel, you may have some bowel inflammation and maybe some diarrhea. If it is near the esophagus, let's say, you may feel some heartburn. If it is near the bladder, you may feel some cystitis or inflammation of the bladder. So it depends where it is located. And the side effects are, again, localized. It would only occur around the tissues where we put our treatment.
Of course, a lot of people, before you scare everybody to death, or we scare everybody to death, a lot of people have heartburn who don't have cancer.
Right.
But people say they get very, very tired from radiation.
Yeah. So fatigue happens about a third to half of the time with patients, and we don't understand why. Breast patients will come in for 6 weeks of treatment. Young women in good health with no other comorbidities. And at the end of the treatment, they are exhausted. We don't understand why.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Doctor. Thanks, Alan.
Oh, thanks, welcome. Jeannie. Okay.
Bye.
Okay, and we'll go now to Donna. All right. Donna, you're on the air. Go.
Okay, I apologize. I'm on my call phone, so I hope it's not too disturbing.
Well,
Thank you for Medical Monday.
Don't drive. If you're driving, you're going to, you know, that could be worse than cancer. Go ahead.
Thank you for Medical Monday. It's always very informative. And thank you, Doctor, for taking the time out for this. You were talking about the high success rate of radiation treating lung cancer at stage one. I recently lost a family member to lung cancer, but they did not know it. It was not determined until he was at stage four. What kind of symptoms would be discernible at stage one?
So most of these patients have no symptoms. And the reason why we're getting them is because there are now programs that are screening patients that have history of smoking. So these patients without any symptoms are having CAT scans, and we're finding these very early nodules in the lung. And they're coming to us. If they cannot be removed surgically, we'll get them. So really, those patients have no symptoms.
So then what you're saying is anyone who has a history of smoking, which I do not, but anyone who has a history of smoking, my grandsons do, they should be tested periodically?
If they have more than 30-year history, yeah. I hope that your grandsons don't have a 30-year
And you should
history.
Also tell them not to you should tell them not to be stupid and stop smoking.
Right, yeah.
Does that sound awful? Okay, thank you very much, Don. Yeah, go ahead.
Only if they've had 30 years or more is what you're saying.
Correct. That's the beginning of the screening program. That we're selecting the patients who are at a very high risk of developing lung cancer.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
Right, bye. Okay, and let's see here. Well, we don't have another thing to take, do we? I'm confused. We don't have a break to take. We've done all our breaks, yeah. Okay, so we'll go to... we'll go to Cindy in Queensbury. All right, Cindy in Queensbury, go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. My question is also linked to fatigue. 20 years ago, my husband had a radical prostatectomy and then 7 weeks of follow-up radiation because his cancer had spread well beyond the prostate. He really came through with very few complications, but the major complication occurred after radiation. He has never recovered from the fatigue. His white cell count is always low, and the fatigue just drives him crazy. So I take it there's no treatment for that fatigue?
If the radiation affected his bone marrow, which it happens to be one of the side effects of the treatment, perhaps no. How low is his white blood cell count?
I'm not sure. He just had a CBC panel, and it came in again. It just low, but I'm not sure I would have to have the report to see how low.
And was it the hemoglobin and the hematocrit low as well?
Yes,
so,
exactly.
Yeah, so sometimes what happens is the radiation affects the bone marrow cells' capability of producing more of themselves, and patients will have to live with a low count. One thing that helps with fatigue, though, for patients that are undergoing treatment and patients that had treatment is a regimen of exercise. He doesn't have to go to the gym. He just
walking and possibly because like we go to Moreau State Park to walk. Uh-huh. And it's up and down. It's not flat.
Yeah.
Kind of up and down to give him more of an exercise and me. So basically maybe a 30-minute or 40-minute inside or outside walks could help?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been proven that patients that walk feel better. They produce endorphins and they feel better, and it's just better for everything, the circulation, their mood, everything.
Well, good question, Cindy. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it, and good luck.
Thank you.
Yep, bye.
Good luck.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. And now we'll go to, let's see here, Sarah in Beckett, where everybody dances. All right, Sarah, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon. I was calling to follow up on Richard's call several calls back. He was talking about alkalining the body. I've been living with an autoimmune condition for 16 years now, and I went off my medication over a year ago. The physicians wanted to remove my colon. They were looking at, you know, immunosuppressant therapies, but a change in diet and lifestyle after 8 months of them not being able to help me get the bleeding under control, just 4 days, and the bleeding stopped. So I just wanted to give hope to everyone out there who is themselves suffering with some sort of condition or has a loved one who is, that making changes to what you're doing is super important. Genetics really does load the chamber, but diet and lifestyle pull the trigger.
Something that the doctor just told us. Thank you, Sarah, for your call. Appreciate it very much. Let's go to Carolyn in Red Hook. All right, Caroline in Red Hook. Is it Carolyn or Caroline?
It's Carolyn, and I'm on speakerphone. I'm not sure. I might lose you if I try to take it off speaker. So
yeah,
let me ask the question,
ahead.
And then if I lose you, he can answer it.
Yeah.
It has to do with a family member who has lymphoma, and I don't know exactly what type, but 4 years ago he had a lot of fatigue, and he was a regular runner. And the doctor looked things over, and she said, you're okay for now. When it gets to this point, we will then, you know, have treatment for you. And so she monitored him, and now 4 years later, she said, it's time for treatment. So he's going to have whatever the treatment is. And my question, without having more information to offer you, is what type of treatment is offered that apparently is going to be periodic according to his need and that his lifespan will probably not be shortened all that much by what he has?
So the treatment could be systemic treatment. Some types of lymphoma are treated with a medication called Rituxan, which works on a special marker on the bad cells. CD20 is the name of the marker. Or it could be...
It works on what cell?
It's called the CD20 marker. It's a it's a marker that the bad cells produce, and the target therapy goes after it. But it could also be chemotherapy. Lymphoma is it's overproduction of white blood cells, and sometimes using chemotherapy to get rid of those white cells gives the other bone marrow cells the opportunity to work normally.
Okay. All right. That's useful. Thank you very much for the information. And I also wanted to say, with regard to the work that was done by the doctor in the 30s about alkalinity, just remember that a lot of our modern-day medicines, Alan, came from an original basis in herbal treatments from indigenous peoples that actually worked. And some of the things that are used today, like penicillin, originally they used mold from bread before they had penicillin on the war front.
Good thing to remember. I stand corrected. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Okay, let's go to Matt. We have some time here. If you want to make a call, you might get in. To Matt in Middletown. It's 1-800-348-2551. Matt in Middletown, you are on. Go ahead.
Hi. I had been diagnosed about a year ago with melanoma. I had a tumor in my back. They did the removal back in December, mid-December of last year. And then did some immunotherapy. The gold standard at the time, they felt that they had everything removed. The gold standard was just to, kind of monitor me from that point on. But I did do some maintenance immunotherapy. And in this past year, I've gotten, you know, there was a PET scan done 3 months out, and then a couple of other MRI scans because I needed another surgery, which I just had about 6 weeks ago. So they did. But the insurance company won't pay for another PET scan, which I was always told at a year you want to get a PET scan, because after you go a year cancer-free, that your chances, your percentage chances go down. So I just wanted to ask you, how important is it for me to push to get that PET scan, which my year is basically now, but I'm getting my scan, my MRI. The insurance company is saying to get, they want it to be detected on an MRI CAT before they'll pay for a PET.
So I not knowing your case is kind of difficult to make an assumption, but when patients present to me and I make the decision to have a test that I think is necessary and important, and the insurance companies does not want to pay for it, I get on the phone and I call the insurance company and talk to one of the medical advisors there, and we come to an agreement. I tell them the reasons why, show some data perhaps, or why I think that test is necessary, and I would say most of the time they agree to pay. So I think that you need to talk to your doctor, and if he feels that it's really necessary, he's got to become your advocate.
Got it. Okay. So my oncologist.
Correct.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. We're really running out of time now, but I'm going to go real fast to Paul in Greenfield. Paul, you're going to have to ask this real question real fast, otherwise we're not going to be able to stay with it. We're running out of time. Go ahead.
Hi, yeah, Doctor, you mentioned that former smokers of over 30 years should have periodic x-rays. I was wondering how periodic that should be, how frequent.
It's once a year.
Once a year.
And I think the protocol now is it's once a year for 3 years, and if you have nothing, you can skip a few years and then continue follow-up.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much, Paul. Very quick question. I can't take her call, but Allison says her son has schizophrenia and is a heavy smoker, and how to get him off cigarettes. If you knew, you'd be king, right?
Oh, yeah. It's very difficult.
Yeah, we know that. We have people in this place that drives me crazy. And I try to help them out, but they don't listen. It's an addiction, right? A terrible addiction.
Very addictive, correct.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you for that. And thank you for all who called, Allison. That's it. We're out of time. I want to thank Dr. Camilo Torres of Vassar Brothers Medical Center for being with us today. You were terrific, by the way, Doctor. Support for Medical Monday comes from Nathan Litauer Hospital announcing the building of a new dialysis center in Gloversville for renal kidney care. Open this winter, NLH.org. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Thanks to Joe Makowick for answering the phones. Our producers, Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Chartok. Thanks for joining us again on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at wamc.org/VoxPop. Stay tuned now for a news update.